This is an interview with Governor Victor Atiyeh at his office in downtown Portland, Oregon. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is 12-11-92, and this is tape 6, side 2. In our last discussion, you finished by discussing a little bit about the Astoria Bridge and the funds that were approved for that. You had said that it was a project by Bill Holmstrom, is that right?
That Holmstrom, yeah.
Holmstrom.
Yeah, H-O-L-M-S-T-R-O-M. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my vote, of course, was opposed to it. We were talking about why would I do that, and I'd indicated that that I didn't think we ought to be telling the Department of Transportation where to put bridges and roads and things of that kind. And to the extent that that could get to be a pork barrel. As a matter of fact, it was followed by Ben Musa. We spoke of Ben Musa, mm-hmm. who wanted some kind of improvement on Highway 97. And so he said, okay, I've forgotten what it was he wanted, but he got something mm-hmm. on Highway 97. Fortunately, that didn't take hold, that idea of telling them where to put things. But as I reflect on the question, it's part of the easing that I was dealing with when I dealt with legislation. Now, it's easy to talk about should I put a bridge there or shouldn't we put a bridge there, and then of course the heat builds and all the excitement comes and yeah, we really need a bridge, and so you talk about a bridge. Mm-hmm. You don't talk about the philosophy of government and should we be doing things like that and would there be pork barreling and that kind of thing. So my decision was not a hard decision. My decision was, no, that's not good. It's not good government. And when I've said to people, they said to me, are you an attorney? I said, no, I'm not an attorney. Well, don't you have to be an attorney to be in the legislature? And I said, no, there's plenty of attorneys. All you need is a set of principles and common sense. I've said that, I don't know how many hundreds of times. Mm-hmm. And I believe it. Okay, mm-hmm. set of principles. You don't open up, in this case, to pork barrel. That was easy decision. I had no problem with it. Others that don't have those principles to deal with have an awful time.
What were your set of principles, or could you?
Well, it's hard to define.
Number them.
It's hard to define. It's sort of evolving. But first of all, I as a Republican, and I think most Republicans would agree that I'm less inclined to get government involved in the lives of people. And so that's one principle. The concept of government closest to the people being the best, mm-hmm. I believe in. And I also believe that a democracy is not an efficient form of government. Mm-hmm. Everybody's trying to make government efficient. We have regional government and all the rest of it. And so the expense, the cost, is an inefficient government. But I think that's good. Mm-hmm. Although I'm a fiscal conservative. So I'm saying, okay, I understand all of this. Okay, but where you are, you do it as efficiently as you can, as inefficient as the system is. Because I believe the government closest to people is the best. Good example. I just cannot understand why the voters in this last election gave home rule rights to metro government. Mm-hmm. It just absolutely blows my mind. Who knows who their metro representative is? Very few people. Government is more remote, but now this mm-hmm. government can pass taxes, they can do all kinds of things. Well, you see, now government is getting more remote. This is offensive to me. Jerry Tippins of the Oregonian never liked me. He says I didn't care about metropolitan problems. He never understood me. He's saying basically he thought regional government was great stuff. So he's coming from the efficiency side. And I can't disagree with him in that respect. But now government is getting further away from the people. Mm-hmm. They have less control over it. These are people that are going to tax us. And they ought to be close. And that's why I admire school board members and city councilmen and county commissioners. They're right there. They're there. They're not going. They don't go to Salem. They're right there. See them on the street every day. And but that's good. That's not bad. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you asked me about principles. That's another one.
Were there other principles that you consciously tried to pursue or maintain or used as standards for conduct, or when you had questions in mind that you referred to?
Yeah, there's personal principles.
Sure.
And I incidentally believe that, you know, I keep hearing this, well, you know, what you do in the privacy of your home, that's okay, it's your business, you have a private life and public life. I say, no way, you can't be two people, you're one person. If you've got a private life that is slippery, mm-hmm. There's no way you can prevent yourself from being slippery in the public. You may think you can live two lives, but one can't. So I don't buy that. But most of my feelings relate to a democracy. What's a democracy all about? I made speeches on the subject. You ever see some of the stuff. I talk about the people. Mm-hmm. You know, first of all, it says we the people. Jefferson, and again, these are things I've said in speeches. When all these folks got together, Washington and Franklin and Jefferson and Adams, all these folks, you know, they're trying to figure out what kind of government we're going to have after our Declaration of Independence and the Revolutionary War. And then they sat down to figure, okay, now we've got our country, what kind of government are we going to have? And you've probably read about the debates that went on but they were trying to figure out what kind of government. But to me, it was very simple. I've said, to kind of paraphrasing, they said, gosh, I wonder if people can run a government. But that's what this is all about. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jefferson said, you know, now he said that the people have the kind of government to which they're entitled, meaning it's up to you folks, it's yours. Mm-hmm. That's why I get all upset because someone isn't going to vote because it's bowling night or it's raining outside or, you know, a whole lot of specious reasons. Hey, you don't understand how important you are in this process. If you don't do it, somebody else is going to do it.
Well, currently right now there's this this problem within the Republican Party of certain interest groups controlling the party by as few as, say, this according to what the paper was saying, three votes for a precinct person. And yet what the party says and does in relationship to potential candidates that will be put up to the people could have a big impact on the democracy of that given situation. How do you feel about a situation like that where it can be so easily swayed?
Well, the system works. I say the system. The system is that you get precinct committee man and woman. Mm-hmm. And they're now entitled to go to the county central committee. And these precinct men and women vote on the chairman and the vice chairman and all the mm-hmm. other things. And then those folks vote at the state for the state chairman. So those that have done it, like even Walter Huss back in 1974, I said to my moderate and somewhat liberal friends, they just showed us the system works. They went out and got people that feel like they do to run for precinct committee man or woman. Those folks went to the central state county central committee and elected Walter Huss, or not Walter, but whoever. The people who went to the state convention to elect Walter Huss. He just shows us that the system works. So, you know, if you feel that bad about it, run for precinct committee man or woman, go to the central committee, you know, it works. However, having said all of that, this is all theoretical. The point is that they've done it. But it injures all Republicans because it was interesting. I had a conversation with the conservative folks, non-confrontational, which is what I wanted to do, not very, very recently. And I'm trying to tell them, look, this is what's going on. I didn't use these words, but the idea was, if you want to continue to elect Democrats, just keep doing what you're doing. And they had, I was listening to them. If you want to continue to elect Democrats.
Elect Democrats.
Just keep doing what you're doing.
Right.
I didn't use those words, but that's where I was coming from. And they had some interesting viewpoints. As I say, it was non-confrontational. I said, this is how I feel, this is what I believe in, this is what I, after all these years of being involved. And I said, the job of a central committee is to elect Republicans. That's the job. Our job is not to promote any particular cause. One fellow said, well, gosh, you know, you got to stand for something. And this comes, you know, from the against homosexuals and against abortion on that side of the issue. And I said, well, you know, I can't really disagree with you. You've got to stand for something. But if these two issues were among the issues, mm-hmm. Republicans are against abortion, Republicans are against homosexuals, Republicans are against our fiscal conservatives, you know, it's all in a pot. I could live with that. But it's not coming down that way. Republicans are against homosexuals and Republicans are against abortion. That's the way it's coming down. Mm-hmm. And so all the other things that supposedly Republicans are for, it's not coming out. But it's interesting. I also discovered, which I didn't know, they work very hard on a platform. Mm-hmm. Because they've got an idea that once the platform is locked in, this now becomes the Bible. And anyone that doesn't hew to that is not a Republican. And I say to them, nope, who knows what's in a platform? The members of the media don't know what's in a platform. The members who are Democrats or Republicans, they don't know what's in the platform. Matter of fact, I got a copy of it just so I could read it. Who knows what's in a platform? It makes news at the moment, but certain things make news. At the convention, we didn't change the position on abortion. So that's all anybody knows in regard to what the platform is. The platform, in many instances, is not too bad. Matter of fact, it's quite good. I actually got it because I wanted to read through it. And then having a general idea where the conservatives are, I'd say, now, do you believe in this? I really couldn't find anything too good, except when I got to a sales tax. And I said, how many of you oppose a sales tax here? And that's in this relatively small meeting. And a couple said they were against the sales tax. Oh, wait a minute. It's in the platform, the Republican platform. Just trying to, you know, you just don't hew to it precisely. Mm-hmm. But that aside, these folks, you know, they believe in that. They don't understand that if you don't like the platform, you just turn your back on it. And most people do.
They feel that a long-established Republican who's been in office for a while should make his views conform to the...
Whatever that platform is. We as Republicans have spoken in convention, and now that's your new Bible.
Mm-hmm. And would they have conformed themselves to the previous platforms of the Republican Party, having been Republicans? Or?
Oh, no, they changed it to conform to what they think Republicans should be like. So anyway, we were talking about principles, and they somewhat relate. You know, I mentioned earlier about the lottery funds, mm-hmm. that should not be a pork barrel kind of thing. There should be a formula for dealing with it. There should be, these are refinements on philosophy, it should not be for continuing. It should be a one project thing, okay, we will fund that, and there's no more money coming from it. So you don't get yourself involved and continually fund. So those things, I suppose, also relate to a philosophy of mine, which I carried out as governor, is that people work awful hard to pay their taxes. And we just should not ever be in a position of wasting their tax dollar. You know, it's just like taking their dollar and burning it up. And that's not the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it fundamentally it has been pretty easy for me as a legislator, because I believe firmly in some of these things, and a lot of what I'm telling you are large, but there's always dimensions of it that fit to this. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, this doesn't fit. And it appeared time and time again. I believed in reading bills that I'm going to vote on. Now, someone might say, gee whiz, doesn't everybody read bills that they vote on? And the answer is no, they don't all read the bills that they're voting on. But I'd read bills that I'm voting on.
If you couldn't read a bill, you wouldn't vote on it?
If I couldn't, and there are times actually, maybe not that I couldn't read it, but I didn't quite understand what was going on, then I'd go to one of my colleagues that I respected, who may have served on that committee, and I'd say, okay, now, Wally, what's this do? And then, so one way or another, I'd find out. I'd either read it and understand it myself or go to somebody that would explain it to me. We don't have that many bills coming at us, except near the end of a session, that you can't take some time to read it. And it ranged in terms of voting. Some members would, it came up just recently because Larry Campbell's talking about eliminating sponsors' names.
Hmm.
Some members would look and see who the sponsors are, not what the bill does. And if it's somebody they don't like, they're going to vote no. It has nothing to do with the bill.
But isn't it important that the people know where the bill is coming from? Isn't there some significance to that?
Well, I don't object to what Larry's talking about. That at least eliminates the guy that doesn't like me who's going to vote against the bill.
Right.
There are some who, and they're there. And these, I you know, I'm not going to identify anybody by name. I'm just saying there are some there who, at least at one point in time, things were alphabetical. Mm-hmm. Roll call was alphabetical. And they just wait until you voted, and I'll vote like you vote.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to read the bill. I'll just vote like you vote. And there's some like that. But I it's kind of vexing at times because I would read bills.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. In our campaign, the first campaign in 74, Bob Straub said that I worked to kill a bottle bill. What? Worked to kill a bottle bill. Well, I moved the bill back to committee with the whole idea of killing it. Wasn't that at all. I read the bill. I knew it was going to be very controversial. And I went to, in this case, Betty Roberts. Betty, she was chair of the committee. This is a real problem here in this bill. She agreed. There was no fight to send it back to committee. Mm-hmm. She agreed.
Mm-hmm.
We moved it back to committee. Well, the perception is that here's the guy moving the bill back to committee with the idea of killing it.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't trying to kill it at all. I was trying to improve it. And took it back. They fixed it, brought it back, and it passed.
And did you vote on it that time?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. I was going to vote on it. But it was defective. That's because I read the bill.
You voted for it when it finally came to
yes,
the floor, though.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
What was the defective element in it?
Oh, I can't remember now. It's some something technical.
Mm-hmm.
And but she agreed. You know, you go to the committee chair and say, here's the problem. And she agreed.
If they don't vote by in alphabetical order, what order do they go in?
Well, Jason finally changed this, at least in the Senate. Senate still does roll call. Mm-hmm. The House has a machine to do it.
Oh, okay.
But then Jason would, we call roll the roll call. The first vote would be A, the next one would start with B, and the next one would start with C, and then they'd finally get back to A again. I didn't like that. I got accustomed to voting first shot out of the box. I make up my mind what I'm going to do. I vote. But I had to wait around to vote. Right now, I don't know what they're doing now. I presume they're still rolling the roll call. I have no idea. But for a good long period of my career, it was alphabetical.
And mm-hmm.
First, it was Anderson, Anala, and Atiyah. Then it got to be Anala and Atiyah. Then pretty soon, it was just Atiyah.
Wasn't there Ahrens in there, too? Or was that before?
Eddie Ahrens was before me.
Before.
Yeah. Nice guy.
With the voting machine, it would just be instantaneous, everybody?
I mean, no. They would have a period of time to vote.
Uh-huh.
And everybody's name would appear, how they voted.
I see.
And then there's a tabulation. So if I wanted to wait and find out how you voted, I'd just wait till you voted.
Uh-huh.
You know, they could still do the same thing in the House. I just wait till your light went up. Yes or no? Oh, yes. Okay. So they could still do that.
Did you ever find yourself in any kind of embarrassing situations where You were called to vote or speak on a specific piece of legislation that you had not prepared for?
No, usually you know when you're going to, what they say, carry a bill.
Oh, yeah.
When it leaves the committee, say, okay, you carry the bill, meaning you open the debate and close the debate. So you know that ahead of time. That now I'm not in the committee, it's not my bill, but I'm reading the bill, and mm-hmm. I'll get up and mm-hmm. debate, so no, not in that sense. Mm-hmm. There is one senator who had a particularly bad night, and he wasn't feeling very good in the morning, so he was supposed to carry a bill. So he finally said, Senator, and that was his bill to carry. So he got up and he made a motion to move the bill to the end of the calendar. Mm. All in favor, aye. And so he moved it, they moved it to the end of the calendar. He's moving back now to go sit down. And then they called the bill. It was the last bill on the calendar. It was the end of the calendar.
I'd heard of another case, maybe you remember this, of a member who really didn't take a lot of initiative, really never had any issues, any bills that he was carrying, but he did have one that he was either carrying or had a strong feeling about and wanted to speak on, and during the session fell asleep, and they just went right through the whole proceedings and called him, and he didn't wake up, and they went right past him. Did you?
Oh, there are funny things that happen like that. You might ask Betty, I can't remember. I do remember the instance. I don't remember the bill. But Betty Roberts, that mm-hmm. is, she came to the session, and she was dressed in, well, I'm going to say overalls, but that it obviously wasn't overalls. It was a nice-looking, I say dress. It wasn't dress. It was pants. But anyway, straps, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And she had to go to the bathroom. Now, in the women's room because of this instance, but in the men and women's room, the speaker's still on. You can hear what's going on. Mm-hmm. Well, they called. I guess she must have thought the debate was going to go longer. This was a very important bill, although I can't remember what it was, mm-hmm. and it was very important to Betty. And all of a sudden, the vote came quicker than she had expected. Here she is in the ladies' room. She's trying to get her clothes back on again. Desperately trying to get her clothes back on again. But the vote was carried before she got on the floor. And it lost by one vote. And this was a bill very important to her. Now, I don't remember what it was, and you may make a note and tell her you had heard about this and see what she can remember, because this would be kind of interesting.
You don't happen to know which session that was, or
no, I don't know if you have to really. You just bring it up and
well,
ask
it's,
her.
Well, it's funny that you mention this because Betty and I have talked about some situations regarding the lavatory, and apparently there wasn't a women's restroom on the same for a while, at least on the same floor that they had converted. What had been the women's restroom into the nurses' room, and the women, few that there were, had to go up to the second floor.
Oh.
And she eventually did start using the nurses' room, the lavatory there, but it wasn't until more women were elected that they were able to change
that. Yeah, so. That's interesting. But you might bring this up, and she may remember it.
Uh-huh.
I remember the instance. I don't remember what the bill was. But it was just because of that particular outfit she had on that day that she ran into a problem.
Uh-huh.
You know, trying, I guess, whatever she had to do, she was having trouble doing it.
I had heard of a situation where the Speaker of the House, prior to his being Speaker, Bob Duncan, was sort of taught a lesson in terms everybody voted on his against his bill. Do you remember that situation?
Well, but not just Bob. It happened to other legislators.
And then turned around and passed it, but it was...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they just decide to gang up with some freshmen, and they get up there carrying a bill, and usually one that really doesn't, not that significant, and all sit down, and all of a sudden, no. You know, they get worried, but no, everybody vote no. And then they reconsider and pass it. So that just sort of spooked them a little bit. But that, not just Bob, that happened to many of them.
So that was a rite of initiation?
That's right, yeah.
Uh-huh. Did you encounter any kind of rites of initiation coming in?
I don't recall any. I don't recall they did that to me. I do recall it. That at the very beginning, you know, I was just nervous as a cat, and it took, you know, quite a long time before I did get up and say anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just wouldn't get up. And there's things I wanted to say, but I'm just too nervous about the whole process. And Duncan kept, you know, if you got something to say, get up and say it. He encouraged me to do that. Later on, he said, God, I wish I hadn't done that. He says, now you're talking too much. There's got to be something in between.
So there was a process when it was difficult for you to speak publicly, yeah?
No, I never had any problem doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after all, it was campaigning. Although
sure.
It is kind of interesting in campaigning. It's difficult to start saying what a neat guy you are. You know, stand up and tell people, gosh,
right,
I'm a good guy and you ought to vote for me. That's very difficult to get over that hurdle. But I didn't have any problem public speaking. That was never really a hang-up with me. It was just that, you know, I'm in this body of people and we're talking about laws, and I just had the kind of a reluctance to get up and talk.
Right.
But once I broke through the barrier, it was easy from then on.
Well, going on to some of the other issues, I noticed that in that 61 session of the legislature, that they also approved the startup of community colleges.
Yeah.
That must have been a major turning point for education in the state of Oregon.
Actually, that was... Was it 61? I'm trying to think, 59. In any event, yes, you're right.
Maybe this was additional funds, but...
Well, it could be, and to that point, it was interesting. I think it was 59. And actually, it was Pat Metke from Ben, one of the Turks, mm-hmm. and they had a community college up there. And so he comes to the legislature and says, in effect, you know, we'd like to have some official recognition, you know, part of the educational process. This is a community college, you know, we like it as a community college, but we want some mm-hmm. state recognition. I, you know, passed fine. And so it must have been 61, they come back. And so they were asking for money. I voted no. Guy said, I didn't know you were against community colleges. I said, I'm not. But in 59, you didn't say anything about money. You just said you wanted some, I'm glad to do that for you. You didn't say anything about money. I'm not against community colleges. Yeah, that was the beginning of the whole process.
There was also the... money approved for the startup of the Boardman Industrial Park.
That was Mark Hatfield's deal.
Yeah, that yeah. was now that that was the Space Age Park that, that
That's
was
right.
being.
Yeah.
And did you have problems with that?
Yeah, I don't remember how I voted. I may have voted no, because this is all desert land out there.
Uh-huh.
You know, I just, why in the world are you going to do something out there? I can't remember, but I do remember that. That was Mark Hatfield's deal, and he was going to get Boeing to come in and test motors and do all kinds of, he had something in mind. It took a long while to get that finally going. And so Jake Bennett was on that, I think maybe 63, with photographs of this desert land where we're spending all this money. But that was a Mark Hatfield deal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was really, actually that finally came up again. Oh gosh, as a matter of fact, I remember debating it fatally somewhere on this subject. But it came up again that we really, had, and it was a pretty sweet deal for Boeing, that Boeing really had smarter lawyers than the state did in terms of tying up all that land. And
Well, it all backfired on the state eventually, didn't it?
And I think Boeing still has good control over that land.
And didn't they sublease it then for agricultural
purposes?
Yeah,
they were making money on it. We weren't making anything on it.